Hi, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. Welcome to Letting Go with Guy Finley. Guy is the best-selling author of Let Go and Live in the Now, and is the founding director of nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. And now, here's Guy Finley.
I'm going to start by telling you something that a part of you knows, but instead of that part being a benefit to you, it's presently a torment to you. And what I'm going to tell you that you already know, but that you can't yet be, is that there is nothing in this universe that's supposed to have power over you. Nothing. You are not supposed to be the handmaiden of hateful thoughts and feelings. You are not created to serve conflicted emotions. You're not on this planet to let any desirous thought or feeling push you towards its own ends. Yet that is your life. Period. Period. You may say it is not, but all someone has to do is speak to you in a certain tone. All things have to do is go wrong, maybe more than once. Maybe it takes two or three things going wrong before the camel breaks beneath the straw. But the fact remains that you can wake up in the morning and already be defeated just because you have been under the power of your own dark dreams at night. And I will say it again to you, that there is no person on this planet, there is no thought, there is no feeling, there is no energy streaming from some conflicted set of planets. There is nothing on this earth or within you that is intended to have power over you. And I'll tell you how far you have to go to even start understanding this. Most of you hope that something will tell you who to be and what to do. That's how far removed we are from being within ourselves, present enough to an altogether different presence in ourselves. That, and I'm gonna have to use these words now, but I'll explain it, that has the power that it does over us because we have agreed to give ourselves to it, which makes it not a power over us at all, but makes it a partner, a friend, makes it a guide, makes it a goodness, because that presence is unconquerable. That presence transforms everything that appears within it into something that is to the benefit of the person who has that presence present in him or her. And I'm starting the talk with this idea because so many people think to themselves that they have this presence in themselves that makes them clean, that makes them strong, when what they have is an idea that has power over them. And I'll make it clear, even if you can't understand it totally, your idea of a spiritual life, of God, if you ever find yourself hating yourself, condemning yourself, maybe hating is too strong for some of you, but condemning yourself, berating yourself, talking to yourself about why you did what you did, and then taking the obvious inherent division in you as being evidence of a spiritual presence, then you need to understand that this is a form of delusion. Because what is loving, what is good, has no enmity in it. It has no judgment whatsoever. No judgment whatsoever in it. Anything that lays a hand on you interiorly, anything that lays a hand on you interiorly is not the God you have named it to be, whether it's the God of the pursuit of pleasures and powers or the God of some presence that you've named as being what's going to rescue from punishing thoughts and feelings. If it lays a hand on you, you're in the hands of something that is not good for you. Now, to move on from this point, this is a little bit of a difficult idea. We're going to have a few things that are a little bit difficult. So take a deep breath, because I'll always let you know when it's time to take a little more oxygen in. By the way, do you know why one of the reasons that I tell you to take oxygen in? Because the impressions and the energy that you're receiving listening require a little extra fuel to be able to assimilate them. And oxygen helps that. Have you ever wondered why somebody's comment that was said to you 2 days or 20 years ago, why it's still sitting in you like a thorn? Have you ever wondered why that is? How many of you ever wonder? I mean, really wonder why? I'm not talking about sitting and hating it. I'm saying, look, get over it, man. All they said was I put on a few pounds. I picked a tough one, didn't I? Why couldn't they say, have you lost weight? By the way, if you ever want to own someone, just say, have you been exercising? It's all you have to do. And they are yours. These are the deep spiritual tricks. I remember changing it from something that someone said, why it matters the way it does. I remember did you ever have a flexi? Probably don't even know what a flexi is anymore. No, it's not one of those apparatuses that you exercise on. A flexi flyer. It was a little sled on wheels. And when you were a kid, it was, you know, this is obviously back 40 some odd years ago. But rollerblades, something that you got around on when you were young. A bicycle. Do you remember your bicycle? Now, the first time you had a bicycle, it was like a god. Because it was the winged Mercury. It took you where you had to go, and you now nothing could stop you. Remember? If Dad said something, just get on my bike and I'm out of here. And who does he think he is? Because I have a Schwinn. And that bike was pretty important, wasn't it? But then came 15 and a half years old, in California anyway. And that meant either a driver's permit, or, if you were really lucky, a motorcycle. And when you had a motorcycle, you had another new god. You had the ability to go places without getting tired going there. You were a virtual god on your motorcycle. Hair flying back. Loud noise beneath you. Did anybody have a motorcycle? And when you were finally able to get that motorcycle, what happened to your bicycle? Bicycle. That's for kids. You remember that? Now, your younger brother, who'd been waiting for a bicycle, maybe he thought that God had visited him because now he got the bicycle and you got the motorcycle. And here's the point, is that what's lower only matters to us as it does in the absence of the higher. What is lower only matters to us as it does in the absence of the higher. When you can have a motorcycle, a bicycle means nothing. Now we have to make a switch. Why do I still care so much about what that person said to me? Why does that matter so much? Why am I still consumed with carrying around how I didn't succeed like my sister did or like my father did? Why am I troubled to the depths of myself, having dreams, if that's the case, over how it is that something took place in the whole of my life? That one event, that was it. I could have been a champ. And then that thing happened. Why is it that that matters as it does? Why is it that that's the focal point of a person's life? Now, how many of you understand what I'm asking? The point being that it matters as it does because it matters in the absence of something greater than itself. In this instance, a person has something bad happen to them, and then they think, what I have to do is have something greater than this to define myself by. So then they name for themselves the plan, the position, the power, the possession they'll eventually obtain, that when they get that, in the greater light of that, that which was lesser will be wiped away, and people won't judge me, and I won't judge myself by what I didn't do or what happened to me. How many of you understand the idea? Now, this is a... Take a deep breath. This is important. One needs to see that the reason that what matters to one as it does matters as it does in the absence of the higher, and then one has to see something difficult to see. That more money is not higher than not having money. That the approval of people is not higher than not being approved by people. That a better car is not higher than a lesser car. That having an image of yourself because you won an award is not better than having a bad image of yourself. It's still in the same world of thought and comparison. How many of you understand this? A very important idea to get across. Because we only know, as we presently are living from the world that we live in, we only know to think what is higher based on a thought that tells us this is higher. But if it was really higher, listen, I wouldn't suffer when I can't keep the car. I wouldn't sell my soul to keep the approval that I won because I accomplished what I did. In short, I wouldn't have something have power over me, because if a world is truly higher than the world I was in, I am not under the same powers I was under when I was in it. Can you taste that a little bit? Let me see. All right. Now, the reason that that is so incredibly important to understand as a concept, that what's lower only matters as it does in the absence of the higher, that we are all the time looking for some way, it's ingrained in us, to find something that will give us power over what has power over us. I was born in a poor family, and I don't want the power of being someone born like that to spend to be my life. I want to be someone who raises himself up. And by the way, this isn't bad to want to excel in the world. I'm not talking about, I'm not judging this. I'm saying that here I am, and all my life I've been under the power of a parent who always was cruel to me. And my answer to it was to somehow become a loving, doving, whatever it is, because then I'll have that power and I won't do it. I'm not saying that's wrong. What I'm saying that is, one does not really change the condition. One is now looking for a power in the same world of thought as the thought nature has been overpowered by. Do you get it a little bit? This is why our lives don't change, because we keep searching for something higher on the exact same level of thought, that thought tells us this is higher. That the image of a car that costs $50,000 is a higher car than one that costs $2,000. Is it really higher, or is it just a machine that's painted and got a label on it that costs more? No. It's still just a machine, but in me, see, the image of that lifts me. And because I'm elevated by the image as I relate to it, whether I have it or don't, I think that means this is a higher thing. But it's not a higher thing. It's at the same level. And this is part of our spiritual work, to begin to understand that we live presently from a nature that creates its own gods, creates powers. Look, how many of you can think to yourself, and I know you won't have to go too far, if I only had this or that only had happened, then I wouldn't be like I am and I wouldn't be feeling the way I do. Raise your hands. That's what human beings do. As soon as, the ASA syndrome. As soon as, then I'll have power. And when I have power, I'll no longer feel as though I have to do this in order to be feeling free of what has power over me now. But how many of you have already done that several times? I don't know if you've noticed this. I acquired certain things to get rid of the feeling that something had power over me. And as a rule, the thing I got in order to give me power over what have power over me now has power over me now. Do you know what I'm saying? I wind up serving the thing that's going to free me. And how can I wind up serving the thing that's going to free me if it was power I was taking unless it has power over me I didn't see? All right. This is all introduction. Take a deep breath. Now, what's important is we're going to put that whole principle, important one, on the side. And now we're going to look at something else. I'm going to tell you a story. That way we'll lighten it up a little bit. There was once a cub reporter who had great interest in great men, great women. And in this interest, he heard about a great doctor. She was in her late 70s and was known for the fact that not only had she won a Nobel Prize in oceanography, but several of her students, a few of her students, had won similar prizes. And the cub reporter was interested, what was it about this woman that made her not only so extraordinary, but that in the world of oceanography, that the very few awards there were usually won by her students. Now come awake, come awake, come awake, come awake. You know, I'll share something with you. Sometimes I think to myself, you know, if I can dial this back a little bit, if I can dial this energy back a little bit, maybe you won't go to sleep as fast. But I've done that, and it doesn't matter. It's as though there's a communication that takes place without you knowing it, that a certain kind of energy and a certain intention behind it is resisted to the hilt prior to it even being spoken. Now, sometimes you just can't help yourself. I know this. But you can work at not letting yourself go to sleep. You can work at it. Work at it, man. Now, this oceanographer was visited by the cub reporter. And he said, I'm just dying to know why all the years you taught did you only have 6 graduates? You must have had thousands of students come into your school, in your classroom. Yes, I did. Well, why did only 6 graduate? And not only why did only 6 graduate, but why did those 6 become themselves known, respected, knowledgeable oceanographers? She says, well, she said, it's really rather widely known, but I'll tell you if you want to know. He said, I really do. He said, well, I had a simple requirement for my doctorate class, which I don't know how long it takes, but I'm going to say it takes 2 years. It probably takes a lot longer than that. And he said, well, what was that? She said, we had our usual classroom studies, but if someone wanted to study underneath me, there was a requirement that each and every day at 6 a.m., noon, 6 p.m., and then once a week at midnight, we would all meet at the ocean, and everyone would have to go in the water for an hour. I'll give you a minute to think about it. The reporter said, you mean during the summer? No. Well, you can't possibly mean 12 months a year, every day, 6 a.m., noon, 6 p.m., and once a week at midnight. You can't be serious. They had to go in the ocean? She said, yes. He said, well, I don't want to be disrespectful, but why? She said, because the only way you'll ever really know something is to enter into it. And there is no other way to know anything. You have to enter into it. Everybody wants to be an oceanographer. Everybody wants to be a spiritual person. Everybody wants to excel. Everyone wants to be a master. Or at least, no, actually, the truth is, everyone wants to be seen as a master. Everyone wants to be seen as someone who excels. That's why you can buy the clothes that you can and get the body shaping done that you can get done and all of the other psychopathic, disgusting things that this planet does to pass its people off as being something of some substance. But to become something different, to fulfill the purpose of this life, which, in case we didn't clear it up, can't possibly be to continue to move along this one line. And let's examine it. What is the mind What is the mind always doing? What is, now let's go back. We talked about the power. What is the mind? Have you ever really watched your own mind? What is the mind busy doing? First of all, most people don't have a clue what it's busy doing. Even when they actually for a split second see what it's doing, they still don't know what it's doing. They just see it was busy doing something and they weren't part of the plan. It's like living with a family and every day you go home and they take you someplace else. You don't know why you're going. You're just, get in the car, okay. Give me your money. All right. The mind is always computing variables. That's what it does. Unattended, it is never-endingly working out, projecting possibilities, rejecting, summarizing, never-endingly coming to some kind of conclusion by which it can then act. But first it measures and calculates all of the various variables, and then it'll arrive at some decision, and that's when you go, I know what to do. Now I know what to do. Now you don't know how you got to that. It's just suddenly, out of all that churning and bubbling and brewing down there, all of a sudden, I have the answer. And then you set out to do what you arrived at that you didn't arrive at, but that you can think back on. Never seeing the thing that actually stirred you into the actions, then the mind will actually create for itself a reverse life. It'll look back and come to a series of decisions based on something that was arrived at that you never even knew you arrived at doing. Have you ever arrived at doing something that after you arrived at doing it and you did it, you realized you were the stupidest human being that ever lived? Who spends hours running variables so they wind up a victim? Does that even sound logical to you? Let's say I'm going to spend at least 4 hours mulling over something, and when I'm done, the end result will be I get mauled. And what the person doesn't see is they're being mauled while they're planning. But the pain of it, the unseen aspect of that world that has, if you will, that is, and here's the point of this, is that it is absolutely unconscious to itself. The world of thought is absolutely unconscious in itself. And it is a world. And this is what I'm trying to take pains to prove, that thought, you know thought, it is a world. And the proof that it's a world is that it goes on without you. And then when it reaches conclusions that it does, then it needs you to act them out. Then when you act them out, you realize you got deceived or betrayed or that something was pushing you to do something against yourself. And then what happens in a moment like that, that fleeting second where you see you've been caught up in something that compromised you? Tell me what happens. I'll tell you what happens. Back into thought you go. Because now thought's going to try to analyze the variables of how it was that you got victimized when you were supposed to become the king. And on and on and on it goes. And in case it isn't clear, here's what I'm working at. Is that we have in thought, now go slow, take a deep breath. Don't you want to live?
You're listening to Letting Go with Guy Finley. For more information about Guy's life-empowering ideas, visit guyfinley.com. We'll be back in a moment.
One reason the wind of good fortune is often found at the back of people who are successful in life is because these individuals are usually found moving ahead of it in anticipation of its arrival. Hi, this is Dr. Ellen Dickstein. The engaging words of best-selling author Guy Finley remind us that real success in life is a relationship between ourselves and a timeless greatness that lives within us. Each week, you can receive a powerful, life-affirming message from Guy, guaranteed to help you succeed with your wish for a new life. Each brief, uplifting insight reminds you that nothing can stop you from knowing the higher happiness your heart longs for. To receive Guy Finley's free weekly key lessons, just visit guyfinley.com. Join the thousands of grateful individuals who are learning how to make themselves and our world a better place. Visit guyfinley.com. That's GUYFINLEY.com.
Welcome back to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley.
I'm just looking right. I'm telling you, you don't live. You don't live. You have a life But that is not what it means to live. Because thought has a life. Here's the point. There is... Now, how many others can get the idea that thought has a life of its own? Obviously, it has a life of its own because I often wind up serving that life. Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. So, it is a life within a life. Isn't it? Thought is a life within a life. It's in me. It's taking place here. So, thought is a life within a life within a life. Because just as thought is within me, I'm within a greater world, aren't I? This body walks around in a series of invisible relationships with an intelligent universe that is using even this physicality for a purpose greater than it knows itself. So a life within a life within a life. At least three lives that we can see, all taking place at once. Now, I'm trying to get you to see that you're missing out on something. Because the one life that you have doesn't even know it's a life. It just thinks about things in order to give it a sensation of living. And it can't even do that without using you to act out what it wants. And that, to the next point, that life of thought. Now listen, incredibly important idea. That thought of life, that thought life is a closed system. Now, what does it mean, a closed system? It means that all it can do is imagine things that are not a part of itself. It means all it can do is imagine things that are not a part of itself. But do you see that thought can't imagine anything without using thought to imagine it? So here's this thought nature, absolutely unconscious to itself, which I'll prove further in a minute. And when suddenly there's a surge of something, it begins to think about how to free itself. So it will imagine what the path must be or the possession of the power it needs. And as it imagines what it does, it is calling on the content of itself, fashioning something out of thought. And then it looks at the new thought and says, look, I'm in a new world. But is it in a new world? No, it's not in a new world at all. It's like having nothing but dough to make donuts and thinking to yourself you're going to make a cheese pie. You can't make a cheese pie from dough. All that little machine can do is crank out donuts. Donut holes. So it's a closed system. Let me understand. Take a deep breath. Closed system means what? And this should already be apparent, but it's not the thought. It means all I can do is repeat myself. Wait, no, it's not just repeat myself. It's repeat myself going down. Because everything thought does has to further divide itself. And the further divided means the more conflicted, the more entropic, the more downward it goes. Which all you have to do is look around, and what you'll see is human beings everywhere who at some point can no longer sustain the effort to keep thought in place, and then that you watch their life like that. Which is why I'll add this thought, the psychotropic drug industry is the size that it is. Because at a certain age, people cannot go on without something to mute and numb them from seeing that all they've done is go nowhere their whole life. Fact or fiction? Do you really think that the drug industry helps this world? Who it helps are those who can't stand to see anymore what became of them. What they have to work with, what's left. Shame, shame, shame on this world for being what it is. But it is the way it is because you and I have agreed to it. You have agreed to it. And I'm going to say it even stronger. And you're going exactly where the rest of the world is going if you remain in the world of thought. There's no escaping it. For thousands and thousands of years, you can see the evidence of a planet that believed the promise of itself was actually higher than the nature making the promise. Whether it was social, religious, financial, everything promising to be higher, to rescue oneself from a world that was tearing itself apart, and everything created to keep the world from tearing itself apart is the new violence in it. Now, take another deep breath. closed system can only repeat itself. How many of you want to spend the rest of your life getting worse? Oh, and then finding new reasons to explain to yourself why you're like you are. Because that's what it does, isn't it? Have you ever noticed that? You never really do anything stupid without being able to explain to yourself why you did it. As though the one who explains why you did the stupid thing is intelligent. I mean, really, if it were, I've said this over 25 years, I must have said this 50,000 times. If what can explain to me why I just fell flat on my face is perfect balance and wise enough to keep me from doing that, why didn't it go before me to make the crooked place straight? I'll tell you why. Because it was the crook itself passing itself off as the light. All right. So here we have a significant point. That this is the definition, if you will, not only of repetition, but of a certain kind of denigrated reincarnation of self, thought continuing to try to present a power to itself greater than itself and being dragged down and into the very nature that produces that, a very unseen, invisible line that the planet and the people on it travel. And why? Next important idea. Thought has no awareness of itself. Now, what does that mean exactly? Thought has no awareness of itself. Have you ever thought to yourself something that after you got done thinking it, you acted out, and as you were acting it out or afterwards, you thought, my God, what was I thinking about? You know, as you said something cruel to somebody, you know, you worked it out in your mind. It made perfect sense to go straighten this idiot out. After all, she should never be like that, or he, who is he to think? And your mind is perfect. The logic is unfailing. It's like you've got the greatest brain in the world to say they're churning out the result. And then you go and you do it, and I hope by God's sake you see that you actually have just hurt that child. You've hurt that man, that woman. You've hurt the world. You see it. And in that split second, you say, my God, what was I thinking about? Now, what does it really mean when you ask yourself, what am I thinking about? Here's what it really means. Who was doing that thinking? It couldn't be me. Because if I had the choice in the moment, I would never hurt someone. I would never do it. If I had the choice, I would never do it. Which means that the whole time that that generation of thought was producing the line of action that it was suggesting to you to do, that those thoughts themselves, while they have a body and they have a function and place, an action that they propose has no awareness to it at all. Not even rudimentary awareness. Thought has no rudimentary awareness. Even a cell in a body has more awareness than a certain individual thought. No awareness in thought. But thought thinks to itself, generates in itself a constant stream of activity that produces inside of the human being motivation. Usually trying to get away from something, like we talked about, trying to become something more, all the time going on. And it's that self that we live from. A self that has no awareness of itself at all. Now, doesn't that explain a lot to you? I'm asking you to look at you. Doesn't it explain a lot that I've lived 30, 40, 50, 60 years from a nature that has virtually no awareness of itself as in its world, and that the only moment of awareness I have generally is when I'm dragged through what it tells me to do, and then suddenly I have a kind of rudimentary awareness. Oh, God, she's crying. Oh, man. Now, men, now what did I do? Ladies, huh? Now, the key here is that that nature, that thought nature, because it has no awareness, has no relationship with anything apart from its own content. It's not in relationship with anything other than what it thinks about. Look, how many of you would sit down to a dinner table with nothing on it, eat there, get up and go, thank God I was so hungry? It sounds ludicrous, doesn't it? But thought will generate for itself what will rescue itself. Look at what it has generated in imagination. Take from that image the sense of power, the sense of pleasure, the sense of being nourished, and believe that it actually just got that. Do you see it? That which means it's not a, it's only in relationship with itself, what it is made of. That's all it's in. It has no relationship with anything. Thought has no relationship with anything other than the content of itself. Now, I can actually hear one of you. Well, why is that important to know? Well, let's just start with this. Because life itself is relationship in the whole. Just for starters. Have you ever wondered why you don't get on with other people? Here's why. Thought tells you they're an idiot. You know why, what's wrong with people. Every one of us knows exactly what's wrong with everyone we've ever met. Oh, and by the way, isn't it true that everyone you've ever met almost always has something wrong with them? Isn't that true? What do you think's at the root of that? Kindness? Love? Compassion? Goodness? I mean, is that what's at the root of defining everyone you meet as well? Yeah. And then the other side of it is that the proof that thought has no relationship except with itself is that 99% of those people that we decide we want to be in relationship with, that thought says let's get involved, is thinking it wants to get involved because it has imagined what that person can give you. That sounds like a nice thing to live from, doesn't it? But see, doesn't it explain the world? Can you tell me, is there one of you that can tell me how a man or a woman can take the life of another human being? Thought. It's God. And its God is different than every other thought's God, which is why there's so many gods and so much hatred and so much violence on this planet. Because we all sit without knowing it in a temple made up of our own mind, filled with the content of our experience and the race and the religion that we came from, that has served us up to a God whose sole purpose is to see that we keep serving it so that suffering can remain that which we try to escape. And everything we try to escape, we escape through a new God that suffering has named. Can any of you see it at all? All right, I got to keep going here. The issue becomes pretty clear. I've spent almost 39 minutes now outlining it. There's no hope in that world, except the hope that thought itself gives itself, which is right to, you know, what's that Paul is saying? Our hopes must not be in things seen, but in things unseen. Well, what else does thought do except come up with things seen? That's all it does. So clearly, we can see, we even showed ourselves, if we're willing, there's a life within a life within a life. So we know there's more than just this life of thought. For one thing, there's me. I mean, just, you know, go ahead and wake up for a second, slap yourself on the face, lightly. It wouldn't be a bad idea for some of you. I'm here. Oh my God, there's somebody in the room with me. God, that you're scaring me. What are you doing here? That's right. So there's the life of thought, then there's the life that it is within. And then there is the life that life is within. And now to move along, because we must. We're talking about the idea of there being more than just the world of thought. And in truth, at least for the purpose of this talk, there are four worlds. There are four worlds. Now don't get hung up in the number. Just listen to the explanation of it. We've been talking about first the idea of the world of thought, that is a self-enclosed world serving only itself for purposes known only to that which has created and generates it. And it can't be good. Inherent in the idea of selfishness is something that is opposed to love. So there are these four locations. First, we'll talk about this idea of our thought world. Then, in order to clarify it, we're going to examine something else altogether. Have you ever asked yourself, we're talking about now locations, worlds, where am I? Have you ever, you know, I mean, obviously, when you say, where am I, you aren't asking yourself physically unless you actually get lost in a car. By the way, how does one get lost in a car? You're going to say bad instructions? All right. Where am I? Refers to two things. First, relative to what we're talking about, there is a physical location. So where am I is a physical location. That's how we generally think of where am I, a physical location. But where am I also, but unseen, includes a psychological location, what we'll call an interior location. So we have a physical location and we have an interior location. Physically, I'm in Southern Oregon. Interiorly, I'm in Negativeville. Interiorly, I'm in Worryville. Interiorly, I'm in Yesville, or the antithesis. What does that mean? We're trying to prove worlds and which is the greater influence. Which would you rather be? In a world physically that you say is a great place, but interiorly you hate everything about your life? Or would you rather be where it doesn't matter physically, but you love where you are with your life? Which would you rather have? The latter. The interior life, the interior location of one is far more important than their physical location. But we never think to ourselves that I'm a bilocated human being. Do you understand? That's not part of our consciousness, that I am where I am physically, but more significant to where I am physically is where I am psychologically. That's not part of my thinking. Why? Because thinking doesn't even know where it is physically. Does it? Ever miss an off-ramp? How do you miss an off-ramp? Stupid freeway? So there is a physical location. My body is sitting here at a desk. You're sitting out there. There's a physical location of sun streaming in. And then there is an interior location of my thoughts and feelings at the moment. What are they streaming? Do you understand the question? What is my experience of where I am? Now, we generally think that our experience of where we are is because of where we are physically. I'm around an idiot. This man's been talking for this long. Our mind is always telling us that where we are is the cause of how we're feeling. But where we are is not the cause of how we're feeling. How we're feeling is determining not only where we are in our heart and mind, but our experience of where we are in the moment. Now, the reason that this is important to understand is that to know where I am interiorly, the whole talk is working towards this now, to know where I am interiorly must itself be more important than the interior state I'm aware of. Because now we're talking about three locations. There's where I am physically, there's where I am mentally and physically, mentally and emotionally, but how can I know where I am in the interior world? Look, a negative thought doesn't know it's negative. We talked about that, yes or no? Negative thought does not know it's negative. An angry thought does not know it is angry. And that angry thought, that negative thought, is part of the interior world. But I don't know that I'm in the interior world unless there is another world present. This is the point of the talk. That there's a physical location, there's a psychological location, and then there is a quality of another life that is allowing us, if we're willing, to know what and where we are by another order of our being. So that in order to know where I am interiorly, I have to have something that's aware of where I am interiorly. The body's one world, the thoughts one world, and the awareness of those thoughts is another world. A life within a life within a life. A life within a life within a life. And can you see that without the third world that we're talking about, and there's actually four, but I'll get to that in a minute, that without that third world, I don't know what the second world's doing. And if I don't know what the second world's doing, there's not a chance that I know what's going on in the first world. I'm just someplace doing stuff. Waiting for the reward. How many of you are still waiting for the reward? Because this is what our society tells us. You just do this stuff, keep doing it, and people will think good of you. Oh, good. A lot that does for the loneliness that I have, for the fear that I have. Now, take a deep breath. How many of you like love stories? Because the fourth world, the fourth location, is what we've been leading to. There's the world of thought that has no awareness of itself. There's the world of my interior life, my thoughts and feelings, and their qualities. And then there's the awareness of these things. that allows me to at least see that something's trying to deceive me. I can actually see that here's a thought and it wants power over me. How do I know it wants power over me? It's pushing me. It's pushing me. Anything that's pushing me obviously wants power over me. Here's a thought, it's pulling me down. Here's a thought, it's trying to pull me down. It wants power. It has power if I go with it. But just simply being aware of that doesn't change it significantly. Here's what changes it. What changes it is the understanding that I don't have to be in that world. Have you ever seen those movies? I thought of a few of them. I can't remember the name of one. Was with Goldie Hawn, and she married this fellow. Kurt Russell. I don't know the name. Anybody know the name of that movie? Huh?
Overboard.
Cute movie. She was a really rich, disgusting heiress who could care about nothing and no one. And he was a down and out carpenter with three kids or so and nothing, and like living in a trailer, a slop trailer. And he was building something for her on his boat, and she just treated him terribly, threw his tools over. And then something happens. She falls off the boat, bumps her head, washes up. He hears about her being down at the local constabulary, whatever, and he goes there and he says, "Sweetheart." And convinces her that they were married because she has amnesia. Takes her home. She goes, "This can't be my home. No, I didn't have kids." "Yeah, you did." And tricks the kids into telling, you know, like she's getting even with her. And then because it's a love story, little by little, she actually learns to love the kids. And she takes care of the house. And she begins to have new values, not based on her psychopathic upbringing. And at the end of the point of this, and there's always love stories like this, always moments where the two are being parted by something. She's on the boat headed out towards her old life, and he's on the dock. And there's always a moment where the lover leaps. That's what makes a love story. Remember in the Last Mohican, "Wherever you are, I'll find you." Remember that? Great love stories always have this indomitable spirit between an individual and the one that he or she loves, and that which nothing can keep apart. That's what a great love story is. And those love stories that are really love stories always have to do with a character change in one of them or two of them. And that in that transformation causes one to have to leave one world to go to another. You think about the love stories. It's always in it. One has to give something up for a love. And so Kurt jumps off the dock, or in that movie Fish, whatever, Dana, whatever it was, Splash, you know, he winds up like going underwater. I mean, all these stories have this. And here's the point that I'm making, is that you have to make the lover's leap. You have to jump into the ocean. You have to enter into the world in which there is no you figuring anything out. There is just the awareness of all of that going on. Just that, and now to the last point of the talk. We talked about how there are these locations that in which a person can come to see themselves, in which there's the state of my physical, where I'm physically, where I am psychologically, and that the awareness of this. And here's the whole point. You see, you can't know any of the places that you are. You can't know any of the worlds beneath you until you understand what it means. And as simply as I know how to say it, you make the leap into awareness that I am. Just do it right now. Just know that I am. I am. I don't have to think about a thing. If I'm really present to myself, if I really am aware that I am, do you understand what it means? Then everything is in that. No thought can pass through a moment in which one knows that he's in a room without him knowing that he's in the room and the thought passed through him. And it's that world that I'm talking about, that one that is so difficult to understand because thought can't grasp it at all, that I live. I am. And to have within you the understanding that not only is that so, but that I'm taken from it all the time, everything pulling me out of the moment, everything pulling me out of now, and I must leap back. That's what it means to spend an hour in the ocean at 6, at noon, at 6, and once a week at midnight. Because no one wants to go in the waters when they're cold and when they're dark and when they're storming. But to be awake and aware of oneself, it doesn't have a precedent relative to a plan or a pleasure perceived by the person. I go in. I enter it. Not when I want to, but every moment that I discover that I'm in a watery grave and a wave carrying me away, whatever it is that's taking place, I realize, okay, I'm going to make the leap. This is the lover's leap. Because what am I leaping to? I'm leaving a world. Do you understand what I'm trying to get across to you? I have to leave the world of myself as I know myself. And I leap into what? I leap into something that has nothing in itself that knows itself other than it's alive. Look, come wide awake. Come aware of yourself as best you know. Come, bring yourself right in the room. Well, I'm asking you, what else do you need? And here's what you'll say. I need to think about stuff. I got to go over who hurt me. I got to figure out what I'm going to do tomorrow. I got a life. No, you don't have a life. Because that isn't a life. Well, it is a life, isn't it? I mean, this is the problem. You're one of the human beings down here. You're doing what human beings do. You might even look good doing it. People might say, oh, he's great. But people telling you you're great doesn't solve the ache. It doesn't solve the pain in your relationships that are produced by thought blaming others for the world you're in. So there's a leap that has to take place. And to the last part of the talk, the leap is from a world wherein thought has tried to figure out how to have power over its own creations into a world in which, as you do it, you come back to yourself, into a world in which by its very presence all things are integrated. Look, when you bring yourself back, when you come awake for a split second, can you tell me where the problem is until you start thinking again? Can you? You can't. There's no problem as long as you're not thinking about yourself. But the split second that your attention leaves being aware that I am, the split second you leave life, then living in you is the thought nature. It's still there all the time. This isn't the abdication. This isn't the dismissal of a thought nature. This is the inclusion of it inside of a world that is greater than itself, which is what it means to be awake. Then you have the best of the worlds. Because instead of what presently is, which is something that's lower, calling itself the greater because it's in the absence of things that are greater than itself, you have the potentiality of something greater than yourself that is able to see where what is lower has a place. Because what is lower does have a place from time to time, doesn't it? I got kids. I got a plan for their future. That's right. That's your responsibility. But it isn't your responsibility to hurt yourself over that. That's where thought takes itself and makes itself a king and then beheads itself for the purpose of a kingdom that doesn't exist. So it's a different world in which we're talking about. And I want to go back to that idea of the lover's leap. Because that's what it takes. That's what it takes. You're sitting at home and you're having... Have you ever sat at home and had a party with yourself, punishing yourself about what happened? Sitting there, oh God, stupid. And there you are. You can't see it. You have little party hats on, little cone thing. Woo! You got a little whistle thing going. You're having the best time because you're in pain. And that's when you leap. You're thinking about some other person and what their life means to you and how important it is that you keep everything copacetic so there's no problems. And that's you seeking a power over something that presently has power over you, and you leap. You give it all up. All of it. Why? For the sake of a greater world. And the proof that it's a greater world is that within it, you get a chance to see that what you thought was the only world isn't. And that there is an intelligence and a compassion and a love that exists outside of the world of ourselves as we know ourselves, and all we have to do is jump off the dock. You got it? Make the leap 1,000 times a day.
Hello, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. You've been listening to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley. To learn more about Guy Finley and his nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation, visit GuyFinley.com, where you'll find a host of free, life-changing information. Thanks for joining us today.